Blog Talk Radio.
His name's President Obama. He's striving to make jobs for your mama and all your other family of the U.S. of A. When it comes to the election, what you gonna say? He's helping by giving out some money. He wants to help make a stronger economy. He's thinking about protecting everyone's health. He wants to make you safe and secure your wealth.
It's President Obama. President Obama.
Yeah.
It's President Obama.
Good evening and welcome to the Ron and Don Show. My name is Don Allen in Studio A, and over at Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, throwing it to you. How are you doing today?
Real good, Mr. Allen. Beautiful day here in the Twin Cities for our national and international audience. Just a beautiful day, you know. I mean, you got to appreciate that, particularly given the winter that we had. Don, I'd like to propose right off the bat that we have a moment of silence for the beloved Maya Angelou, who passed from this life to the other side earlier today. Just a great American, first and foremost. A Renaissance lady, if you will, actress, my God, dancer, poet, and et cetera. Age 86, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. So, correct.
Just kind of moment of silence for the beloved Maya Angelou. Thank you, Mr. Allen. Appreciate it. And to our listening audience. What do we have, Don?
Well, you spoke about just now Maya Angelou. And one of my favorite quotes, I just have to say this, Mr. Edwards, is she says, "I've learned that you shouldn't go through life with a catcher's mitt on both hands. You need to be able to throw something back." Maya Angelou.
How profound. Quotes. How profound and how compelling, if you will. Yeah. Just tremendous history. As I said, she was right there with Paul Robeson as it pertains to being multi-purpose, if you will. Just so many things that she was gifted in doing. So many different disciplines, if you will, that she displayed such expertise in, et cetera. So it's another one of those giants that has been lost. Really to this country, just to quote-unquote the black community, but to this country. So what do we have, Don? A lot of stuff going on in our beloved city, man. So what do we have? We have a couple of guest speakers or guests tonight. Yeah. So let's get started. The first one is Ms. Youssef. Is that correct?
Yeah, Ms. Layden Youssef, the executive director of Crossing Barriers, and we're going to welcome her to our show. Ms. Youssef, welcome.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks for calling me in and letting me know about your show.
Okay, and I wanted to ask you, you know, we've been corresponding via electronic email here for like maybe the last month and a half, ever since, you know, we've heard about your situation, and you're at the point now where you can talk about it freely, and I would like you kind of to bring our listeners up to speed about Crossing Barriers, what's going on, and the folks involved, and your audience, there are people that have no idea who you are or what your agency is and what you've been through. And so I would like you to explain it with them in a nutshell, basically, of what's happening. And so go ahead, do that for us.
Sure, yeah. Well, I hope you let me know when you want to ask me any questions because I don't know how much time we have. It's a long story. But, well, Crossing Barriers is a community organizing organization that started out in 2004 and 2005 advocating for East African students, mainly Somali students and Oromo students at the time, where they were struggling in the Minneapolis public schools. At the time, I moved from the East Coast and saw a lot of students that were struggling with ELL, and I have also been an ELL student when I growing up in the East Coast, so that kind of hit a chord. So I started advocating for students, and I saw a lot of resistance to the advocacy that I was doing with other Somali community members and brothers and sisters that were working with us, and how the system kind of really fought us just trying to bring awareness to the issue. So Crossing Barriers came out of that, and it came out of actually a lawsuit that took place in Minneapolis schools on behalf of ELL students called Mumid versus Abraham Lincoln High School. And that lasted for 5 years, from 2004-5 to 2009, and it went to the U.S. Supreme Court, and it was rejected at that level. But during that process, we saw that there were a lot of students that were struggling in Minneapolis schools, and they were being ignored. And so through that, we didn't think that we were going to be able to continue the work because we couldn't even get a, you know, no one wanted to host the program. And our lawyers at the time said that you need to really start a nonprofit in order for you to even get some funding to even pay for our fees. So that's how we got started. And then from after the lawsuit was finished, we had other EL students we were advocating for. We moved into dealing with charter schools. And then we spread our wings, working with other immigrant students and then African-American students, and we wanted to kind of bring communities of color together to kind of address this. But every step we turned, we always saw a huge struggle in just trying to bring the word out because of the oppression in Minnesota that we felt not only as Somalis and Africans but also as people of color that we still are struggling with. And so our organization was one of those organizations that really struggled with that. And throughout that process, actually, we became Community Action Partnership was our fiscal agent, and there was a lot of resistance
now,
there, too, at the time.
Let me just stop you there.
Sure, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Community Action Partnership, is this Washington, Ramsey County, or Hennepin
yeah,
County?
Yeah, Community Action, okay. Yeah. So Community Action is a national, they have chapters in every county. So this chapter is in Community Action Partnership of Washington, Ramsey County. It's a huge nonprofit that serves Head Start, all the Head Start program for low-income families, the heat assistance, energy assistance, job development, car ownership, project success. So they do a lot of that. So their job, as you probably know, what Community Action started at in the 1960s was to end poverty. And so, but the culture has become much more corporate, you know, as a lot of the mainstream nonprofits have become. So at the time, the leadership that was there, which is different from the leadership that's here, really kind of pushed to try to bring immigrant groups into the mix. And so they invited us to be our fiscal agent. They invited us so they can be our fiscal agent, and that's how we've been housed there ever since until probably I don't think after June we will be any longer, but we've been housed there ever since. And that's how – so we started running programs out of there and organizing, and we thought we were going to really have an easy kind of a welcome, but instead we saw a lot of resistance, and I really saw a lot of discrimination that shocked me about how, especially the community members that came from my community, some other community, were treated, and also African Americans, and it's been historical there too. So it's been going on for many years.
Yusuf, let me just ask this question for mm-hmm. clarity and transparency. Now, what years are we now talking about? You initially got started in 2004-2005. Mm-hmm. You said this was an outgrowth of some litigation that ultimately, you said, went to the United States Supreme Court in a particular case dealing with Abraham Lincoln School.
High school,
and
yes.
That was
mm-hmm.
located where?
In Minneapolis. It's an alternative school that was located in Minneapolis called Abraham Lincoln International School or Abraham Lincoln International Institute.
Okay, a baccalaureate kind of program? Okay. All right, so
we're now talking
about the CAP agency because that's what the Washington Ramsey County is. It's a CAP agency. Community Action Program. So now, what years are we talking about now?
So we moved there 2006 as a, you know, we were housed there 2006.
Uh-huh.
And Jim Scheibel was actually the executive director, and he left in 2008.
Let me just get so far for the purposes of our international and national. Jim Scheibel, the former mayor of the city of Minneapolis?
Yeah, he was the one who actually welcomed us to come in. And there was another man.
But we're talking about the same person. Jim Scheibel, former mayor of city of St. Paul, right?
Right. Yeah, and then the person below him at the time was Kirk Hayes, an African-American man who has been there for many, many years, and he was there, but he also left after a couple of years. Yeah.
Okay. This is with the CAP agency now that you're talking
about. Right, yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me just ask, so who is the exec director of the CAP agency that we're talking about now?
Now it's a man by the name of Clarence Hightower who came from Minneapolis, I think Minneapolis Urban League, and he's been there from 2008 until now. He's there now.
Okay. Go right ahead. Mr. Allen, go right ahead.
Yeah, and so, one of the things that, you know, that we pride ourselves on here is getting down to the root of the problem and what happened. Well, what was your situation there with Community Action Partnership
and what's going on? Well, they really, you know, we saw a lot of things in the beginning, which always the leadership addressed, but then After Clarence Hightower came on board, things kind of changed, and we kind of sensed that he wasn't really about our program as a fiscal agent. I mean, one of the jobs that the board always pushed was to try to get community groups and to support community groups. But Clarence Hightower really never approved of our program. He didn't like it. He kind of made that clear to other staff members who kind of related that to us. And so recently, the tension was kind of brewing, but we always kind of didn't really bother with each other. We stayed out of each other's way. But recently, the last year and a half or 2 years, things have gotten to a point where it just got worse, and the relationship became even what I expect, you know, just it became much more intense, and the fact that he did not want crossing barriers to be housed as a tenant, because we were paying rent and we also we'd been paying fiscal fee, was very clear. So what happened about a year ago, or less than a year ago, was that we have a curriculum for youth, and the curriculum for youth is very successful and has been very successful. And some folks in the community actually asked us to work with them, but we said, you know, we've had other relationships before that kind of didn't pan out, so we kind of wanted to stay away from that. And I wanted to have a professional contractual relationship at the time. But them being our fiscal agent, they also had our money. They would always keep our money. So for a year and a half to 2 years, they were keeping our money but didn't tell us about some financial conditions that they didn't kind of do the fiduciary duties. And when we said that we really didn't want to take part in the project, we were told that, hey, guess what, you guys? We realized that the money that we were holding you guys and that's spent now, we didn't take money rent out. And we're like, okay, well, how much was the rent? They said, well, it's $200 a month. And I said, okay, well, we'll get another grant, and if you guys want the rent, we'll pay you. And they said, well, no, we want it now and now. I'm like, well, we always had this relationship where when we had grants, the money would be paid up front. So we said, you owe us interest rate. We know that we had issues with our photos that have been misused of Somali youth. There are a lot of issues with our curriculum. So, you know, if you guys are saying we owe you rent, then you owe us this money. You can deduct it, and we can move our separate ways. But I got harassed a lot. I got harassed a lot by his staff, and then later on by Hightower, and I filed a complaint against him to his board. His board dismissed the complaint. But the complaint was very long about the history of the harassment that I went through and the bullying that I went through. And it went all the way to the CAP agency in Washington, D.C. It went to their board. It went to the state – what is her name? The congresswoman in that area. I forget McCollum. The name of it. McCollum. Yeah, it went to the Department of Human Rights. It went to the Attorney General. I mean, I was under attack every day coming to that space. And I've also seen a lot of African Americans and some African folks leaving.
Okay, now,
because
now that you said that, sorry for cutting you off. Were you there when Kim Ellison Mary Anderson both worked for CAP?
Yeah, mm-hmm, I was there. I worked right across the hall from them. Yep.
Okay, and they both resigned, I guess, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, Kim Ellison was kind of pushed to go out, because what happened with Hightower is that he has an all-white staff working for him, and the white staff are the ones who would, you know, who harassed me. His CFO harassed me a lot. His other former CFO was a decent guy, and he left. He couldn't deal with it. And so his CFO harassed me a lot, and I filed complaints. It's all on record. I went to the Department of Human Rights. Mary Anderson left, too, because of discrimination issues. I think that was on record at the Department of Human Rights.
I just want to interject there. Mr. Edwards, Mary Anderson's case is still an open case, and so the data request I sent in about a month ago, they declined it because it still is considered an open case with the Human Rights
Department. Okay, you sent a request into the State Human Rights Department, Kevin Lindsay's operation?
Yes, I did.
I wanted to
get a detailed account of what was going on, and they were courteous enough to send me a letter and pick up the phone and say, you know, I'm sorry, we can't because it's an open case.
Right.
Yes.
Now, Miss Kim Ellison that we talked about, her name has also been mentioned. This is the former wife of current Congressman Keith Ellison, Democrat, 5th Congressional District. Is that who we're talking about?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so the Kim Ellison is the former wife of the United States Representative for the 5th Congressional District. Of course, McCollum is for the 4th Congressional District. Okay, continue on. Go ahead, Mr. Ellison. Go ahead.
Kim Ellison and Mary left, and then the issue would rent, and we said, okay, when this issue continued, they would send us letters. They said, let's have a meeting, and I don't want to be harassed anymore. Let's have a meeting with our board, and let's figure this out. We have people that were involved that helped us out a lot, so we were trying to have a meeting with Clarence Hightower and his board. Well, Clarence Hightower didn't want to have a meeting, and he sent a letter to one of my board members at the time and said that I'm going to, we don't resolve it. Oh, they said that they want us to move to another space. We said, well, okay, if you want us to move to another space, and you don't want to deal with the situation, we need to really figure this out. So because we want to move out of here if we continue to get harassed. So before we even move to another space, can we deal with this issue with Ren, you guys are saying, and also the issue that you always, and the harassment and the bullying, and they didn't want to do that. So instead of dealing with it, Clarence Hightower and his administration went ahead and filed an eviction notice on crossing barriers. And that was back in April. So I had to get legal team, and we went to court. When we went to court, they lost the case. And then that was unacceptable
for them.
Who
lost the case? The cab agency lost the case?
Yeah, cab agency, yeah.
Okay, what was the date of that court appearance?
I think it was, I think the hearing was April 10th, and I think maybe I don't know if the case is on file. Actually, it's very recent.
And so the courts ruled in your favor. Is that
the
correct?
The courts ruled in our favor because what they filed was, as a landlord, they filed a technicality where they said that you have to just leave the space no matter what. So we had clients, we were serving immigrant students and students of color that were coming to us. They said they didn't care, they want us to leave. And we were low income, we didn't have any money at all. We were all getting donations. And at the time, a lot of the foundations didn't want to give us money because we were advocate agencies. So we said, okay, well, if you want us to leave, then we'll go to court and prove our case and then let the judge decide.
Okay,
well,
April 10th of this year, you wound up in court and you prevailed, is that right? So did the cab agency appeal? Did they appeal that?
Yeah, they went back so it was under the housing court. If they said they wanted us to leave in 30 days, and they used some technicality where they didn't do it properly, they didn't file the case properly, and the judge said that, well, if you're saying, we told them in court, and it is on public record, that they owe us money for the misuse of photos and interest rate of over $8,000 that they've collected. They've collected $8,000, over $300,000 of our money that they managed. We want that money, and then they can deduct that from the rent they're saying they owe us, and we can move on. Well, they said, no way, we're not going to give you anything. You're going to get out, and we're going to make you homeless. And I'm like, well, that's not going to work out. So we went to court. The judge said, well,
they used the word, who used the word homeless? So who?
Well,
said someone on
basically,
Mr. Hightower's staff?
Hightower. Some other, well, I don't say Hightower used the word homeless, but they, he didn't say the word homeless, but they wanted us to leave in 7 days. So seven days basically means that get out, we don't care where you go. So we're like, okay, well, we're not going to go, and we're going to go to court. So we went to court.
You went to court again. This is the second time.
I'm just telling that same story.
Leading up to April 10th.
The judge said, well, why are we in this court? Because you don't have 30-day notice. You should, and he dismissed the case. When he dismissed the case, they said they're going to go back again. And at the time, things were kind of getting heated within the community. I was getting involved with a lot of the Somali members that were our supporters, found out about this, and they were not really happy about it. And some of the Somali leaders went to him and said, this is getting out of hand. We need to stop this. And he didn't want to do it. They said, if you're worrying, he said, we will move in there. It was a confederation of the Somali communities of Minnesota. They said, this is a very important program to our community. Community Action needs to do more work engaging immigrant community and community of color in a real way. We will even move there and we will resolve it. Let's just make peace and move on. But Hightower said that because Levin Yusuf, meaning the executive director, filed a complaint against me, then that the board said no. So we're going to go through the second hearing, and that was kind of shocking to some people because it just showed they didn't want to, you know, we tried to even settle with them at
the hearing. They didn't want to be accommodating, in other words. Okay.
Yeah, they didn't want to be accommodating.
What's the status of this second round
of
legal action?
So we went to our last hearing today, and we decided to move out, and basically because they were using a law that says writ, which you have to vacate. So he told the Confederation of Somali Community Leaders that he doesn't want any rent from us, and they just want us to leave. And we're like, we will leave, but we will leave only if the judge says to leave. We're not going to be bullied to leave. I'm not going to be harassed anymore. I've been harassed a lot. And I will only follow what the judge says, and I think it should be on public record. So we went to court. Our lawyer said that this is not about rent. This is about retaliation, a copyright infringement. It is on public record, and that this issue where the leadership is pursuing this small agency run by immigrant community shows that there. You know, to us, we said that it shows to us that there's just some issues here that needs to be addressed, and it's more complicated than just a tenancy landlord relationship that they've been
okay. So what happened in court? And this is in Ramsey County.
Yeah, right. So today.
Okay, and so what happened this morning?
Today we decided to move. We decided to
you
get
decided
out.
Decided to move. Okay, so the judge.
We decided
wasn't necessary
to be,
for the judge
so the,
to.
The judge
wasn't necessary for the judge to make a ruling. Did he rule
no,
one way or the
judge
or the other?
Wanted. The judge saw. The judge saw that. You know, because the first hearing they said, I'm a poor, low-income woman that runs this agency. We don't have anything, and they have very big, important people on the board. That's what they said. So basically
that's what the
racial,
court said? Are you saying you
that's
said the
what
court
their lawyer
said, that?
Said. Their lawyer,
oh, the lawyer
said,
said
that.
That. Okay.
Their
right.
lawyer said that in the first hearing, that we were very poor. We didn't have any money, and it was me and my intern, who was African-American, and there was an all-white staff that they need us just to leave. And
you mean all-white staff within
from
the campus?
From Community Action, right.
Yeah, okay.
They want to
and what was the number of your staff during the life of your program?
We were very small staff. We've always had up to 3 to 5 staff. I mean, we're a small agency.
Okay.
We've had interns and volunteers. So to make a long story short, what happened is that was the culture that's kind of what they presented, that they felt like this is a very powerful agency that can do this. But the mission is to end poverty in low-income community, but yet that's the culture was to go after low-income agencies.
I'd like to interject here, Ms. Youssef. Now, African-Americans that are born and raised, and especially in Minnesota and here, this is something that we've been going through since our birth, since we came out of our mother's womb. This is not new. And it's obvious that you have experienced what the American black has been experiencing since they arrived here on the East Coast from Africa. What is your solution, or what is your? What is your solution to this whole this issue? Because I see.
Well, this is
I see Clarence Hightower who. Want you guys out, and you know we always know there's two sides to every story. And
we're leaving
right
anyway.
Back.
You can get their quotes and what they think, but we decided to move out of the building because we didn't want to be harassed anymore by corporate organizations that get a lot of federal funds to support low income families. Yet they so we didn't want
be,
that anymore.
Let me be absolutely
so
clear,
I'd like to finish
on this. If you could,
my point,
you know,
though,
because we're not able to overtalk. Now, did the judge make any kind of ruling on this matter?
Yeah, I was going to get to that piece of it. Okay. If I can finish, that would be great because I'm just trying to get. It was a long story, and I want to let you guys ask me questions. But so the judge said, "What about today?" He said, "You know what? Why don't we, instead of saying she, meaning me, you're talking about a nonprofit? Why don't you guys just let CB stay there, and then you guys resolve the issue with the monetary issue?" As the confirmation stated, and they said they don't want to do that. They want us out, and they said, if once we settle this case, they said they don't want crossing barriers to talk anymore about any fraud that we're saying that they're committing, or any issues with our interest, and any issues with our with the money that was made out of our program.
They wanted a confidentiality agreement.
Well, the confidentiality agreement, meaning that they wanted to put that, that we said no. Because
that's what
that's
they were talking
issue.
About, a confidentiality
that's a different,
agreement.
That's a different issue because, number one, this money, we have to go to small claims court and they have to sue us for it, but we also have challenges for it because they owe us interest rate and the fact that they've misused our photos and the fact that there's been a lot of harassment and bullying on my part. So these issues are going to be unresolved. Even when we leave here, this has to be addressed. So this has to be addressed. So we vacate the place on June 11th, but these issues don't die because this is not I'm not the only one this happened to. This has happened to a lot of women of color in that agency that it happened to, and it also happened to white women that are older. So this is not that the ages of.
Also, you have age discrimination also. Okay.
And I've witnessed that. Yes, I have. Mm-hmm. I have witnessed that, and we talked about that in the complaint. So my solution is, you were asking me, Don, a question about what you guys have been going through in terms of African American, community members. As African immigrants, we're going through something here where Somali professionals are a target with, number one, the mainstream organizations that don't want any activism in the Somali community except tokenism, and they're trying to push that in now, and there's a pushback from the community. And number two, they don't want anyone to speak out on any issues that affects the Somali community or immigrant community or any community of color as a whole, where the issue becomes about addressing systemic racism in our system. That's something that people want to push around, and the worst people that hold that are tokens that are part of the oppression. So our solution is to continue to organize. Our solution is to continue to talk about it. And our solution is to deal with it and not to run away from it. And to deal with tokens for us, because tokens are the number one problem for us. And if we don't deal
when you say tokens, you mean token what? People who are tokens politically, or what do you say?
Tokens means that people of color that have been put in positions. Token means to me, people of color that have been put in positions to maintain a system that is failing.
Does that translate into
poverty.
Both communities, both immigrant, African, and African Americans?
Well, because I don't look as an African American man. You probably went through a different racism that I'm going through as a Somali Muslim woman. But it's the same kind of. We're getting it from
how
both.
So?
Because for me, every day I'm either judged. Every day I'm either judged because of my religion. I'm judged because they think that I should be at a certain level of education.
Feel that African Americans didn't go through that for 400 years?
No, what I'm saying to you is that right now for us, religion, and right now for us, discrimination is our religion, and the fact that they don't want to give us opportunities right now, where the African American community people that I have seen, a lot of them have been through that, and we are now going through it at a different level.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Okay.
All right. Now, do you intend to appeal the decision? Oh, that's right. You said the judge didn't make a ruling today?
He did. We made an agreement that we're going to be leaving. That we made the agreement that we're going to leave June 11th.
Okay, June 11th. Let me ask you a question here, and then I'll turn it over to Mr. Allen, and we can probably begin to wrap it. Mr. Allen may have some questions. When was the last time that you did pay rent? Can you share that with
us? Well, we paid rent. Every time we paid rent, they took it out of our grants because they've been managing our grants. They told us we don't pay rent. We give them the money, and they take it out. They've been our fiscal agent.
Okay, so they've been taking your money out for how long? I mean, many years?
Since 2006.
Since 2006, they've been taking the money out. Okay, so how did the court address the issue that you were delinquent in your rent?
Well, they said that because they didn't have. I guess the lease was not proper. The lease that they signed with us, or they didn't have a good lease with us. That they said that they used a month to month instead of say, and so they wanted to change the rules in the middle of the game.
I see. Okay. All right. Go ahead. Mr. Allen, go ahead. This is it's interesting.
Well, yeah.
Any questions?
No, I don't, but I'd like to thank Ms. Youssef for coming on the air and explaining her situation there with the agency, and just keep us updated here.
Absolutely.
We greatly appreciate it.
Well, if you guys want to get quotes, feel free to call any of these staff, Terry George, Denise Satura.
These are the staff
HR.
Who work for who?
They've always come to the hearings, so the hearings are public records, so you guys can go look up the hearings.
Who they work for, though. That's my question.
They work for Clarence Hightower. These are all Clarence Hightower
Do they still work for Mr. Hightower?
Yeah. So you can call Terry George. You can call Kevin Myron, who's the board chair.
And what would they tell us?
Yeah.
what I'm saying is, if you want to get their point of view about this, you know, so you guys are reporters, so you want to get both sides, right?
Well, you know, they can.
We're not reporters. We're journalists, actually.
Well, church, I don't know.
Journalists.
Yeah, you want to get their take.
So these are people that you're recommending that we reach out to. What about if we reach out to Mr. Hightower?
Yeah, go ahead. Call Hightower.
Okay,
that's what I'm saying.
Okay, I just kind of. We don't want to shut anybody off.
No, by the way, who is
the chairman of Mr. Hightower's board?
Kevin Myron. He's the CFO of Common Bound Communities. He's the CFO of Common Bound Communities. He'll be happy to tell you about the case.
He's also the chairman of the CAP agency board?
Yeah, so he's the CFO of Common Bound Communities. That's his 9-to-5 job.
Well, that's the chief financial officer. We're talking about
right. The
chairman of the board of the organization that oversees the CAP agency.
By law, they must have a board of directors. What I'm saying is he's the board chair of Community Action, right?
Oh, okay, and then his job is he's the chief financial officer of some organization called Common Bound, right.
They do
Common
a lot of low-income housing.
Okay, Common
yeah,
Bound.
Common
all right,
Bound.
Then. Okay,
yeah.
All right, then.
And then
all
you
right.
can call Terry George. He's the financial officer. Dean Dazzle, he's the CFO of Community Action. Joanne Morgan, I think she's the HR director. Denise Satura, she's the planning person for Hightower. So they all have been – they've all been coming to the hearings.
Okay.
All right. That's great. Okay. So now we know who they are, but I think we'd really want to talk to Mr. Hightower. Don't you think so, Don? We go right to the top.
Yeah. We need to talk.
Yeah.
To him.
Ask him these questions. This is nothing hidden. It's been on record forever. It's just been out there.
I might give him a call and see what's going on. See if we can get him on the
All
internet.
Right. Okay. All
but
right.
Hey, Mr. Youssef, thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Take care, guys. Thanks for inviting me.
All right. Take care. Bye bye.
And
okay.
Mr. Youssef,
well.
We have
so
people.
What we got out of this, though, is that what I'm a little bit puzzled by is that there was a litigation on the 10th of April, which Ms. Youssef indicated was favorable to them, and then that kind of changed a little bit. But then there was a hearing this morning, and how'd you read it, Mr. Allen? Did the court?
Ruled in favor of
the CAP agency, or did they indicate, I hate to say it, splitting the baby and throwing it out with the water, that her organization, Ms. Youssef's organization, would agree to vacate on the 11th day of June? I mean, how did you read that? What did you take away from that?
Well, Ms. Aaron, I got kind of upset toward the end there because, again, you don't tell me I'm a reporter and who I can call. I'm actually a caller and tell her this, and hope she's still listening. And that I can call this person, I can call this person, African-Americans, and Somali-Americans have different racism than blacks do. And, don't stand over me like I'm a two-year-old and tell me about that I got to wear a mask every day when I walk out my front door, wondering, as an American, lived here all my life, and understand what this institutional racism, this regular racism, this bigotry and buffoonery that goes on here, in America that I haven't experienced that, and she experienced it in a whole different level. What kind of shit is that? I'm sorry. I snapped a little bit. But
I have no idea that, I'm listening to what is being said, just trying to get a feel. I'm not understanding how if the rent was being taken out of the grants, that how the issue became one of a failure to pay rent, meet their obligations. I'm just not sure. But maybe at some point, Mr. Hightower, Reverend Hightower, or his designee will, deal with the statements and questions that were posed on tonight's program. I heard a lot about discrimination. Wow, we have lived with that all of our lives. We've lived with it for over 450 some years. But anyways, thanks again for reminding me of what it is that we are confronted with as Black Americans who came here in bondage. I wish I would have had a sponsor that would have brought me to the United States, quote unquote.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I say me, I'm talking about my ancestors.
And so,
any other calls? I understand we have a possibility of a caller responding to last week's program dealing with Anthony Newby and some information and allegations.
Yeah, we actually have her, and we have another caller. But the caller is going to be a little bit short because while she was talking, I was talking to the callers, okay?
Uh-huh.
We have a if I'm not mistaken, a senatorial candidate calling in. And I would, you know, she saw the show on Facebook and has been listening as a fan of Black Focus, also the Ron and Don
show. Okay,
well,
let's get her on. You say she's a senatorial or congressional candidate?
I have to find out for sure, but she's right here. And
okay,
Heather,
well, so why don't you get her on and talk with her? Okay.
Hey, Heather, how are you doing, Heather?
And what are you?
Okay, why don't you introduce yourself and tell our listening audience, domestic and internationally, who you are, what you're running for, what's going on?
Well, my name is Heather Johnson. I am running for U.S. Senator. That my competition would be Al Franken and whomever the GOP decides to run. And the Independence Party is also running someone as well. And I was listening to tonight's program. It's wonderful to have on these different topics in our communities that are going on. And Donald, I really agree that, you know, Black Americans have dealt with discrimination since they came here. I mean, the very nature of their presence in our society is from discrimination and slavery. So I feel like that particular experience can certainly identify with the speaker's experience here as an immigrant.
Okay. And I was going to ask you now, are you running as a independent, libertarian, Republican, or are you running just
Green
as
Green Party or whatever?
Green
yeah.
Party.
I'm running as a libertarian. They actually nominated and endorsed me at convention.
Oh, congratulations.
Okay.
Thank you.
Congratulations. So,
are some of your concerns about what one-term Senator Al Franken has not done, and what would you do differently?
One of my biggest concerns about the DFL in Minnesota is they've run themselves as the party of tolerance, wanting to end poverty, and brought in tolerance for all different communities, but their track record says entirely differently. And I hate to point that out. I hate to have to say it, but they've been around since, you know, the 1940s. They've been solidly in power in Minnesota since the 1950s, and this is definitely not a party of tolerance, not a party of people concerned about poverty issues in the state of Minnesota, and not people for small business and different groups of people, small charities. If they're really about that, then that would show in their record. And Franken, I was a bit concerned that he wanted to appoint Obama's, what's his name, Barton, to judge in Washington when he actually thinks that it's okay to kill Americans without due process. He actually said that, and Franken supported it.
Oh, wow. Wow, yeah. Well, Franken only won by a few votes. What is your do you have a website yet, or what is your campaign headquarters? Go ahead.
I do have a Facebook for my U.S. Senate candidacy, and we're working on the website. My treasurer is going through training right now, so we'll be able to take donations, and we are collecting signatures until June 3rd because we have to hand them in order to have our names on the ballots.
Got you. How many signatures do you need?
Need 2,000.
Okay, that's not a bad number. And I know you saw on Facebook you did have an event tonight, so that's good. Hopefully you got a lot of those signatures. Well, why don't you, Heather, give us an update here? Because it's going to be June here in a couple of days, and then we have, you know, this hot summer going on. I look forward to seeing you in the debates and the other things that go on with the other candidates. It should prove to be pretty interesting. And
yeah.
I wouldn't worry about the Republican candidate because you'll probably beat the pants off him, whoever it is. So thanks for calling in, and we look forward for an update.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And, Ms. Edwards, we have...
Interesting. Challenger to Al Franken, if you will. Very, very interesting.
Yes.
Okay, what else we got, Mr. Allen?
Well, we got Queen Nucci, who's been so patiently holding, and we just have to get to her right now. And you're on live, Ms. Queen.
Wow. You know, I've been sitting back enjoying the conversations that's been going on. And it just goes to show, you see, how, what direction these organizations are headed. And I'm going to tell you, what I see is a room with a dim light. And some of these organizations that think that they can't be shut down, that they do these wonderful jobs, it is, and I said this this week when I went into Knox and I spoke with Mr. Newby, you know, you're only as powerful as the people that join your organization. So if you don't really have people that are go-getters out there, that know how to go out there and get people in the community and really engage the low-income, I'm talking about poor people, black people that support these different movements and really don't are clueless about CAP and about NOC and about Occupy Homes and about whatever organization that's out here. I would, this is information, what I'm trying to say, is that you really need to engage, go in, find out what it is that they represent, and then do some homework on the people that represent these organizations that are in our communities. And be angry if people aren't following through with doing the things that they say that they're supposed to do. If they're receiving $40,000 and $50,000 or $25,000 to go out here and door knock their communities and saturate these communities and really get people engaged and coming into those doors. You know, you really got to do your homework. Bottom line is you got to do your homework on these communities. There's no other way around it. You got to do your homework on the people that are in charge of these communities, because otherwise we're going to continue to fight for economic justice, housing justice, education, food justice, environmental justice, just like we did in the 1960s. And we in 2014 now, and if we can't get it together, right, if something is missing, it's because we haven't networked strong enough. We haven't got out there and did what we need to do, and that's the thing that I would kind of bridge to, is that, you know, if we're still fighting those issues and problems of what happened to us 50, 60 years ago, and we haven't come up with no adequate solution then it's just like that lady said. You know, we say one thing, but we really don't do it when we get in office. We mean a whole nother. So, you know, and myself, I'm kind of tired of people playing referee and playing politician when, you know, we got serious problems here. People are homeless. We got people that work jobs. And if you think that the solving the issue of $9.50 is enough, then go down there to PST and go down there to the Salvation Army and ask how many people down there. I know 75 people down there that work a job that makes $8.25 and $8.50 an hour and work ridiculous hours and still pay the shelter's rent, okay? They pay the shelters to live in the shelter because they can't afford to pay the rent, the light, the gas bill to live in an apartment. And I want to see what organization out here, since there's so many and there's so many powerful organizations out here that have that type of service where people can come in and get them an apartment that they can afford at $500 a month. I got 75 people. I can sign you up right now if you got some apartments for $500 a month.
Well, there's no apartments for $500 a month.
I know there isn't. I know there isn't. But if you made $8, you might could afford $500 a month. But the reality is a one-bedroom, a decent one-bedroom is $700. Now, how is $9.50 going to help them? Oh, but thank you
Well, let me say on this, and this goes way back probably a little bit, just a tad. You were probably a high school student. That's what's called the David Stockman trickle down theory. That takes us all the way back.
Okay.
That takes us all the way back to Ronald Reagan. That's called trickle down. I guess if you're making $8 an hour, enough trickles down, you'll be able to get a $500 a month apartment. Of course, what big money says is that, well, you know, we're subsidizing these apartments and et cetera. In fact, there was an article, Mr. Allen, Star Tribune, yesterday, talking in terms of how difficult it's becoming to provide the kind of apartment dwellings that will bring the right kind of people into North Minneapolis, because there are too many apartments that are being quote-unquote subsidized, so that poor people
What's
at least
the right
have a roof
kind
over
of
their
people?
Head.
What's the right kind of people, though?
The right kind
you
of
got,
people. I mean,
got
really, that's
low-income
what, that's
people
what they're saying.
Already busting their behind. I see so many people out at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning catching a bus way out to Eagan to get a job for $8.50.
Yeah.
Maybe $7.25 until August.
Queen, I want you to hold on and don't go in the middle of this conversation. But we have a caller. But before I get that caller, just stand by, caller. I need to ask Mr. Edwards, as a historian, as a record keeper, and as the most prolific civil rights activist in Minnesota, this question, Mr. Edwards: was there ever a time in the history since you've been in Minnesota, Minneapolis, St. Paul, where the Twin Cities,
1945,
that if there was a problem in the black community, that black men and women gathered together and went down to the mayor's office, went to the governor's office?
Oh, my God, yes. In fact, I'll tell you a quick story, and Queen Nucci's still with us. There was a meeting in Mayor Arker Nafterlin's office. This would have been about 1968, and I mean, young brothers were out there. We were ready and prepared, and et cetera. There was a meeting in Arthur Nafterlin's office, and this had come about a year after there had been a meeting in that little park over there by Zion Baptist Church, in which about 300 young black cats got out there and dealt with the issue of no employment, and we had just had a night of upheaval. Most of North Minneapolis had burnt, et cetera. And lo and behold, 600 jobs emerged within a matter of hours. The governor, by the way, was Karl Rovog. The mayor was Arthur Nafterlin, and young black men had taken over leadership. Now, a year later, there was a meeting in Arthur Nafterlin's office, and an actual fight broke out between a man by the name of the Reverend Stanley King, who is now deceased, In fact, your uncle's worked with him, Mr. Allen.
Mm-hmm.
And then later to be state representative Randy Statt. And I remember the police came breaking into the room. They thought that the black folks had attacked Mayor Arthur Nafterlin, and in fact our brothers were battling. And the reason is that we were putting tremendous pressure on the system with regards to meetings and et cetera. Out of that came organizations like the Urban Coalition. The Urban League was strengthened, if you will. The NAACP back in those days was a fairly strong organization.
Oh, yeah.
And so to your specific question, in the 1960s, early 70s, there were numerous meetings, and there were specific actions taken that brought about specific results, particularly jobs, housing, dealing with police misconduct and et cetera. But the key was the economic issues, and so sure. There was a time in this city when the African-American community demanded that kind of respect, okay?
Okay.
It hasn't happened in a long time.
Okay, now that you say that, we have Queen on the other side, and caller, I'm getting right with you. I know you've been on hold. Just a minute, caller. Queen said something in the beginning, the lights are dim in the building, okay?
Mm.
Something to that effect. And
there's a for lease sign coming.
Yeah, exactly. And what I've been looking at, Mr. Edwards and Queen Nucci, is that Queen and I talked earlier, and I kind of went into this a little bit for my little three-year-old went nuts on me. But you have these agencies, and all these agencies that from Summit Academy, Urban League, all these places, Sebathme, all these places that their top leaders are friends with the political infrastructure right now.
Mm-hmm.
So they will not go up and say anything to a Betsy Hodges, a Mark Dayton, or what's the guy in St. Paul, the mayor of St. Paul?
Chris Coleman.
Yeah, they won't say mm-hmm. anything to him because of the friendship. Yet our people are dying in the streets, mm-hmm. you know. And then when you try to rally something together, you can tell the sellouts because they back off from you.
Let me say something on that. I just have to do this. I'm not sure that on the white side of the aisle they consider many of these Negroes, African Americans, to be friends. They consider them to be assets. consider them to be assets. Now, you know, many of our leaders may think that they're friends with these people and they can hobnob with them and et cetera. But I can tell you from long experience in this town, and we're talking about becoming politically active in 1959, okay, I'm just blessed to still be here and still be able to function, okay, and love every bit of it. But I have to say to you, Mr. Allen and Queen Nucci, that one of the mistakes that oftentimes we make is that we think that white folks see us as a friend when really they see us as nothing more than an asset.
Mm-hmm.
And assets are what? Assets are
mm-hmm.
created to serve a purpose and then be discarded. Okay, I'm sorry, Don.
I need to add something to that.
Go ahead.
Just sparked something with me. My thing is that or they see those people as the voice of the community. They see those people as the leaders of the community, right? Like, because that's what they think. Oh, yeah, well, because we see you all the time down here fighting these issues with these other organizations that we use as assets to push on us to get what we want the people to move for whatever issue and not the problem, the root cause issue and not the problem. And so we use those people as voice and leaders of the community. And overlooking, I think I said this earlier today, Ron, is that they overlook the fact that we've been around for a while. Look, you've been around since, you know, the 50s doing your thing.
That's right.
I
started
as an
activist in 1959. Thank you, Queen.
Yes. And I came in 1992. So, mm-hmm. I mean, my thing is that, you know, they don't know the history. They don't get to know. They don't do a power analysis because that's what they call that. Mapping and power analysis and looking
yes.
about to mm-hmm. see who's who in the community. They just look at whoever joins a group of people to come down there and make a bunch of noise, and that's power. You know, that's their definition of power. And so often those people are looked at as the voice of the community, right?
Exactly.
So you don't count the people that came and fought before you. We don't know them, so they don't count, right?
Okay,
we don't know you, Queen. You just popped up, didn't you? You just came around with Knox, right? You just came
and
around.
They don't know
how
long you've really been here. Let's get the listener in. I mean, the caller down. We owe it to the caller. Apparently, you say they've been holding for quite some time.
They've been holding
for
a while. Caller, you are live on the air. Go ahead, please. Who are we speaking with?
Well, thank you very much for letting me in before you guys shut down the show. But, you know, there are like four things that I want to say after listening to today's show and last week's show. And these are things I'm going to just say it and hopefully you guys hear me out before responding. Now, one is the crab in the bucket syndrome. That's one. The second one is bite the hand that fed you. That's two. The third one is after listening to the Somalian sister, and I'm going to call her sister because, yes, we all have had experienced oppression from the white man, so we all are on the same boat, although we didn't come here on a boat together. I wanted to say that although the Somalian community have not been here as long as we have, as African-Americans, they stick together for their people more than African-Americans do. I'm an African-American sister. I see this in my community, and I can say that. And so in saying that, we have too many people in our community looking for this nonprofit money as if their criminal history deserves a salary. Grant them a salary. We need to educate people. They're getting their work done. And so another thing I wanted to say about the politicians that came on, I'm tired of these politicians, especially the ones who don't look like us, running as candidates trying to relate to poor people and throw up this, oh, I'm going to be the one that focuses on poor people. Well, we know when they get in office, they all stick together as politicians. So as black people, we need to be up on game when it comes to a politician coming in our community trying to relate to our poor people and be all buddy-buddy like Bill Clinton eating barbecue and all that. You know, we need to pay attention to all those type of things and not be no fool. So that's just something that I wanted to say. If anybody want to respond or whatever, they could do that, but I'm glad that you all gave me a chance to say that.
All right. Thank you. And feel free to call in anytime because there's nothing I can disagree with.
Yeah. Amen.
I just would like to say that that is on point, you know what I'm saying? And first and foremost, that's why I created One Family, One Community, because One Family, One Community, that's what feeds me. That's what feeds me. That's what's been driving me. I understand well. I had 11 properties, so I understood well about the banking system. I understood well about how these people are playing us about loans and debts and how people are going through these foreclosures. It is definitely our community that is affected. And the other piece to that is that be careful of sitting at certain tables so that you don't feel like you owe nobody nothing when the plate comes down the aisle, you know? You know, I understand that real good. If people feel like they give you something, then they want you to turn over your whole life for them. Like, they want you to sign up, sign over all your ideals. They want you to let them represent and speak for you. You know, you have to learn how to be an entrepreneur and be creative and stop waiting for somebody to feed you. Go out here and learn how to fish so you can feed yourself for the rest of your life instead of taking a fish and a loaf of bread and thinking that that's going to feed you for the rest of your life. You're right. And I would agree about these politicians getting out here playing referee and playing games. I think I heard this week that, you know, that we got people that represent us in the Fifth Ward who really are leaving it up to organizations to speak for us. And that they're not, you know, they want mansions built in near North. Right? When we got...
Well, that's what Anthony Newby said, that he basically runs the office of the Fifth Ward Councilman. I mean, that's really what he said last week.
But, you know, they all, you know, here's my thing with that, too, is that they feel like they have a place to go to and, you know, right there is a place for them to go and politic with. Well, then that means that, you know what they say about number one, and you number one until you get some competition. So I'm going to say this. People, when I usually, you know, give out information, go get you a 501c4, which is a tax-exempt way of receiving contributions so that you can run some campaigns and fight on education and housing and environmental justice and food justice or whatever it is so that it's located in North Minneapolis as well. I mean, that's what I did with the Poor People's Campaign of Minnesota, is I went to the IRS and got a 501c4. The only way you can get the application is you got to go down there. And that's how I found out who's legitimate in my community receiving funds and who's not legitimate.
All right. Queen Nuts, appreciate you. We get to have you back next week. We're down to the last minute and a half. Thank you, my sister.
Yeah. Well,
all right.
Know, before
all right,
quickly,
thank you.
Before you hang up, we got a comment. We got a comment. Hold on. We got a comment from the Minneapolis Urban League.
Some crickets.
Yeah,
maybe in the jungle.
Okay.
All right. Again, thank you, Queen Nucci. Mr. Allen, that looks like it basically wraps it up for this hour program. We appreciate all of our callers, and let James Brown take us home.
Okay. Here we go. Great show.
All right. Put your pants up.